You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Matt Moore, joined by Adam Mares. On the show today, we're going to talk a little bit more about the loss to the Los Angeles Lakers on Monday night. We will talk about Michael Malone getting himself an award. We'll talk about another injury to the Nuggets backcourt. And we'll talk about the big rotation and where we think that's at going forward, as well as a small preview of the Knicks game as well. Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in this episode. Adam Mares, didn't get a chance to talk to you last night because you and I are old. And
these late games are killer, man.
The games are late and you and I are old. And so you were unavailable. So I heroically drank a Red Bull too late and then did a podcast. let me ask you, I guess this is the big question from that Lakers game. They had a chance to win despite playing badly.
Yeah.
No LeBron, right? How do you feel about the Anthony Davis matchup right now?
I feel actually surprisingly good about it. You know, he had a pretty good game last night, but given that team, like if you bring a healthy LeBron into the equation, you know, then I feel terrible about the Anthony Davis matchup. But if you know, the Lakers team last night was very similar to Denver's team last night. It's a bunch of guys who can play defense, so the defense was great, but it's not a very cohesive group. It's not a group that you'd be like, oh yeah, those are five-man combinations. There are a lot of clunky ones, and the game played out that way. It was really tough to watch. I think if the Nuggets and Lakers get matched up in a first round, it's going to be the ugliest series ever, the highest rated ugly series ever. And, you know, but I feel good about Anthony Davis. I mean, he had to have a great game and a lot of balls bounce his way to beat this Denver team. And so I feel okay about it. I feel okay about that matchup. I don't necessarily feel great about the Nuggets because I felt like last night was sort of what I expected every game to look like with everybody out. And there's this part of me that keeps wondering, has the winning streak that they've been having, especially the last four or five games, has that been the outlier and this more in tune with what we should expect? I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ryan Blackburn has tweeted some of the similar things. I think everyone's kind of like, they have to be bad without Murray. Like they have to be bad without Murray.
It's not just without Murray. I think they would look coherent with Barton and Monte on offense. But it's more without all of those guys. You just look and go, Millsap had a scoring game. PJ Dozier had a scoring game. You know, they've gotten contributions. Jermichael Green's had a scoring game. If none of those guys have one, which might be the default position that none of those guys actually have a above average night, they might only score 90 points or whatever it was they had last night.
Let me ask you this question. Who do you think did they need more out of last night? Like, who is the guy that you're like, they need more from? If they had gotten a game from X, they could have won. Who was the guy that you looked at and say that?
Honestly, Michael Porter. And it's funny because he had a great second half, but this is the burden of superstars. You can't have bad nights. I mean, if you watch, you know, if Donovan Mitchell has a bad night against a good team, the Jazz probably lose, especially if it's your top players. If Chris Paul and Devin Booker struggle, then the Suns are going to struggle. Last night, you need to have Michael Porter and Nikola Jokic locked in to play against a good defense in that first half. I just felt like it was a learning half for Michael Porter. I'm not necessarily concerned about him, but it was one of those ones where it's like, good, I hope he has a couple of these coming up because he has to – it's going to be like that in the playoffs, locked in defense, physicality. He's not going to get comfortable looks very often.
Yeah, I feel like one thing, if they are shorthanded when they go into a playoff series, which they probably shouldn't be, but if they were to be shorthanded when they go into a playoff series – then outside of Murray, obviously, then I feel like they're going to have to match up Hunt a lot more than they want to. Cause I think they just want to play the offense, right? Like you just want to run the offense and get good looks for guys and have everybody contributing. But I feel like, especially in that type of a series, it's going to have to be like, look, Aaron, like you're going to have to get Alex Caruso switched on you and you're going to have to not get your dribble interrupted and you're going to have to score on him. But you just,
I don't think that's a winning formula. Because I don't think Aaron Gordon can.
So, I mean, that's an interesting question, right? It's like, look, Gordon racked up points in Orlando. He wasn't dynamite efficiency, but he was more of a contributor than he is now.
Not by that much. I think he averaged 14 points per game. You know, he's averaging 11 now. I think
this season, yeah, but a lot of that, like, he got banged up early versus with Kyle Lowry. And then, like, last year, I think he was averaging more. I think he's capable of averaging 15 a game, pretty easy, 15 to 16, right? And, like, think about that. If he scores, he was 2 of 7 last night for 5 points. If you got 9 more points out of him for 14, that game looks remarkably different. You know, yeah. Like, I think this is the key, is I think Gordon's scoring floor has to increase. Like, however you're going to do it, you just need the production.
I don't think it's going to happen. I agree with you that would solve things if he could do it. I don't expect that any more than I expect, you know, say Jermichael Green needs to improve his scoring, or, you know, any of those types of guys. So Denver's just in a tough spot offensively, but that being said, they, you know, they can play great defense. I mean, I thought last night defensively, they did some really nice things, especially in the clutch, especially during that run. And I also think, you know, if there is a path for Denver to make it back to the Western Conference Finals and beyond, it's going to be Jokic going, you know, having some of the best scoring games. And even though they have some bodies to throw at him, I still feel like he could have scored a lot. I mean, he missed a lot of bunnies. He missed his 3-point shots. And he's that kind of scorer. You know, he does have nights where he just is a little bit off. But in a playoff series, they're going to need that game that he had last night. Instead of 12 of 28, he's going to have to be 16 of 28. He's going to have to make one or two more threes and one or two more post moves. And if he did that, they would have won. And it's unfair because that's a tall ask. But I do think that that's what it's going to take. That's what Dirk did in 2011. He just had great game after great game after great game scoring.
Two of Jokic's lowest field goal percentage performances have come versus the Lakers. Yeah. Do you put anything to that?
I mean, they have big bodies. I do think that they're, you know, those are guys that are going to make him work just by sheer size. They're going to guard him straight up. I still think that last night was a below average night for him. So I think he can be a little bit better, and that's all he needed to be last night. But other than that, no, like I don't think there's a guy out there that you say, man, Jokic is going to be shut down by this guy. It's just any matchup that can make you work 5% harder. Those are margins that matter, especially when you're shorthanded.
The play I've argued most about, do you think Austin Rivers was reprehensibly bad on the Talen Horton Tucker putback?
No. I mean, look, it's one of those plays where if that was game 7 or an elimination game, you'd hope that guys are just playing to the whistle and this or that. But that play, it's a drag. There were so many plays down the stretch of this game that you're just kind of like, well, that's unlucky. And that was one of them. He shoots a spinning – Talen Horton Tucker shoots a spinning backhanded shot, and it just so happens to miss everything in a perfect way that nobody reacted to the ball, because it's hard to react to the ball like that. So it looks bad on tape. I think if that was game 6 or 7, you'd be like, hey, man, how dare – do you not care more? But the fact that it was just this game, you go – unlucky bounce. And then an unlucky finish. Talen Horton Tucker finished that one, I think, a little lucky as well.
What did you think about Campazzo getting that final shot?
I mean, it was, to me, it was one of those, they were down 4, I think. It was just such a scramble that it was like, somebody's got to get a shot up. I don't know if they were necessarily like looking for Faku in that moment, but for sure. it just worked out. Those plays, when they come down to the end, are chaos, and I don't. You can always be like, well, why didn't you do this or that? But it's like, it was chaos. They needed to get a shot off as quick as they could. The Faku foul, I thought, by the way, there's like angles of this that I think make it look more ambiguous. When it happened in real time, I thought it was pretty clear that Faku changed the angle of his, like, changed the direction he went to run into Davis. I also think Davis changed the direction he was going to run into Faku. To me, it was a little bit of a double flop. But, you know, Faku is the one that made the contact. And it was almost like Faku was trying to do something crafty. AD saw it and did something craftier. And it ended up in a foul.
Look, I mean, you got to protect AD against bullies. You know, you can't let a little guy like AD just get bullied like that. Just absolute the enforcer.
It was a really annoying play, especially because it wasn't needed. That's the part that was even more bothersome.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some good news and some bad news. We've got both on the other side. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Michelob Ultra celebrates joy and how it creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. At 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, Michelob Ultra wants us to nominate an Ultra Player of the Week. Last week, it was Facu Campazzo. Adam, who do you think should be this week's Ultra Player of the Week for the Denver Nuggets?
Man, that's a great question. Who did play with joy this week? The default position is Jokic, so I'll give it to him. I feel like it was Jokic. Is there another player I'm forgetting?
I think, honestly, I kind of want to give it to Paul Millsap.
He definitely played with – yeah, he had a very joyful – he had the nice little post move, and then he does a 360 dance. That was joyful.
So let's give it to Paul Millsap this week. Jokic is going to get enough. Let's give it to him this week. Paul Millsap is your Ultra Player of the Week. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making this part of your day. Matt Moore alongside Adam Mares. Adam, do you want the good news or the bad news?
Let's do good news.
Okay, I always go. You know what's funny? It drives my wife nuts because she always pulls the, okay, I've got good news and I've got bad news. And every time immediately I'm like, I want the bad news first. And she's like, but that's not how it, like, I can't, it's supposed to be. And I'm like, I don't care. I want the bad, like, I don't, I want the good surprise at the end after the badness. And I've dealt with that. The good news is that Michael Malone has won Western Conference Coach of the Month. Yay.
He deserves that, man. He deserves that. I think. Can you hear that? Do you hear the applause?
Nice. Very well done. Good job. Look, I think it's amazing that I continue to get comments about how Malone is a bad coach and like the reason this team isn't. It's insane to me at this point.
Do you think the Austin Rivers quote about everybody F's with Mike? Do you feel like that put an end to the Malone, like, is he, do guys like, because there's sometimes people are like, you could tell MPJ is out of here first chance he gets, yeah, because this, that, and then when someone comes, yeah, out and is like, everybody loves and respects the coach, you're like, oh, okay, maybe, oh,
okay, yeah, maybe. I mean, I would think that improving literally every season, that going further in the playoffs every single season, that like developing all this talent, making the Nuggets into a relevant Western Conference force, I would think that that would be enough, but it seemingly never is. I will say this though. One, I'm very curious as to see what Malone does with the little glass award that they will give him for coach of the month and what he will do with that. And then two, you know, I have a big article up on Action about the difference between playoff and regular season teams, and coaching, I think, is where it matters more. I think honestly, front office and analytics people that I've spoken with, they tend to generally just kind of be like, coaching doesn't really matter. Like, not really going to make a difference on your team that much.
Matters like two or three. Usually they're like, it's worth about two or three wins. Yeah. I think the thing I always hear from them is that bad coaches can destroy a team, but good coaches maybe add two, maybe three wins, but not that much. Not as much as a great player.
But the difference, I think, is that in the playoffs, these little margins are what will decide so much, because oftentimes these teams are pretty even in playoff environments. And Malone, I think it's pretty important. Like, here's what's funny is people want faster adjustments. I don't know anybody. I was thinking about this. So that's a pretty common critique of Malone is like, okay, well, yeah, he adjusted, but he didn't adjust until game four. It took him a long time. I was thinking about this. I don't know anybody that adjusts outright. Like, I don't know anybody that goes into a series and is like, oh, yeah, we're completely tailoring what we're doing in game one. Like, anybody.
The longer you cover this league, the more – I mean, it was 2 weeks ago that we thought the Millsap-Green lineup was the worst thing ever, and how could you keep doing this and all this guard? And then all of a sudden it's great, and you're kind of like, oh, I get – he knew something about sticking with this through the tough patches to get to the sunny patch. And I don't – and I think it's the same with a playoff series – you know, there's so many different layers to what a coach should be doing. Do you adjust because it gives you a better margin, but maybe it kills this guy's confidence, or, you know, the team, does it show the team you don't trust in them if you say, hey, we're going to change what we've been doing all year? There's so many of those layers that I don't think people respect. But Malone in the playoffs, I think, has actually been a coach that has made, I mean, look, Denver has started behind in series and come back in three out of the five series that they've been in. You know, that shows a willingness and ability to adjust, and for a team to adjust.
Yeah, and I think, you know, look, I think Malone is pretty – I mean, look, I just can't imagine this. It's been the hardest year of most people's lives. Like, who has it not been a hard year for? But I think for Malone in particular, on top of all of the stuff that we've all experienced with the pandemic and the global unrest and everything else. He has to deal with the bubble. He's in the bubble without his family, loves his daughter, loves his wife. Like, they're very close. Like, he has a very close family unit. I was away from them that whole time. Comes home. He's got 2 months, starts the season again. MPJ is back in protocol. He loses to the Kings 3 times, which is just basically stabbing him in the heart.
It's true.
You know, injuries, fatigue, the schedule, the testing, which he hates. He loses Jamal. Like, last night, like, he was just like, after the game, he was commenting. He was just like, I don't know if we're cursed or what. Like, we've got to get a priest in here. You can tell he's just like, he just doesn't, like, these injuries. It's one kick to the nuts after another. And I think that that's really difficult for him to kind of manage. I think he's done a really good job, though, of after the Murray injury, it could have been like, well, you know, we know what the deal is. You know, you do the best you can.
Yeah.
And instead, like, he stuck with it. Like, the accountability has been resolute. Like, no, we're still going to play Nuggets basketball. Doesn't matter who's out there. I did not, when I said next man up, I did not mean next man up unless it's one of two guys. It's next man up. Like, let's go.
Right.
And it's kept him in there and kept him engaged. Malone seems to, I mean, Jokic seems to really care about him. That's been one of the things that's interesting, is like, there does seem to be, it doesn't even seem to me like there's like a rocky relationship that's been, you know, over time has grown to be appreciation. Like, there does just seem to be like a genuine appreciation between the two. And even if they haven't always been completely on the same page in terms of how the game should be played. And I think honestly, they've moved in the same direction, right? Like, that's what I think is most interesting, is if you look over the past 2 years, like, you and I have done so many podcasts asking about like that tension point. And I feel like over time, Jokic has moved in Malone's direction and Malone has moved in Jokic's direction. And the results is an MVP season for Nikola Jokic. So Jokic deserves, obviously, by far and away the most credit for both his individual success and the Nuggets. And Malone would tell you that. But I think after that, like, Michael Malone has been the second most important force on the organization. And there's a lot to be said for that.
And I'm glad he got this award. I mean, it means a lot, I think, to him. You know, it's kind of surprising that it's his first one, because he's had some, I think, great months. You know, the Nuggets have had some great months, and he's been great in tough spots with the Nuggets. So I'm happy that he got one. And I just think it's a cool thing for the organization.
Now the bad news.
Okay.
Come on down, core injuries, old friends. Good to see you again, PJ Dozier.
Not an adductor, is it?
So Stotts was talking about this. It's a groin injury. But the problem is, like, that groin, like, those injuries are still in the same classification of Wilson Chandler's hip injury, which originally he suffered in China, but reaggravated here. Will Barton, Gary Harris, like, this falls in the same category of all those. I think Harris has had several adductor injuries.
Yeah.
So, I asked Jeff Stotts, who does In Street Clothes on Twitter, is a great resource for injury information. The average in 2018 was 10 days. This season, for whatever reason, and I think probably because of the rate of games, it's a little bit up, and it's at 13.9 days.
Mm. That would take us to the end of the season. I mean, that is back for the playoffs, but I mean, how many guys are the Nuggets going to get back either in the playoffs or with like 2 or 3 games to go to the playoffs? It is insane.
I mean, that's one of the things is there to me, there's a very big difference in those two. It's like, you need to get them back for the game versus Portland. Like, they just need to be able to, like, just for conditioning, so like, you don't put Will Barton out there and he has to play 38 minutes cold. Like, you can't do it. You just can't. That's not how this works. You know, you got to ramp some of these guys up. And so Dozier, Morris, Barton, it's all going to be, I think, down to the wire. It may be one of those things like it was with Gary Harris last year, where they missed the start of the playoff series and then like game three they're back. Like, I could see that happening.
And by the way, that gave Denver an emotional boost, not just a defensive boost, which it obviously gave them, but it gave an emotional boost too. And it would be interesting if Denver does get into a point where it's, you know, you get a guy back on game one, then you get another guy back on game three and another guy on game five. And it's just, you know, I don't know, maybe not, but what are we hoping for at this point?
Right. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. I want to talk about the big rotation. I also want to talk about this Knicks game coming up, which is not as big as the ones after it, but still a pretty big game. We'll do that when we return on Locked On Nuggets. But first, time to tell you about Built Bar. What's your favorite Built Bar flavor? Did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, plus the occasional limited time flavor? When you talk to a Built Bar fan, they're definitely passionate about their faves. And if you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out. You got coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. There's something for everyone. My favorite, personally, I got to go with peanut butter brownie. It's just a really great, it's just really good. I also like the raspberry with the white chocolate. It's awesome. The raspberry with white chocolate is, to me, is a step above. It doesn't taste like any of the other ones, and it's really good. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're also healthy. Most of the flavors have 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams net carbs. Order today and get that raspberry or mint brownie or whatever you like before Mother's Day, Sunday, May 9th. You can get a box of Built Bar, perfect for a mom on the go. Most moms I know love Built Bar. Send her a box and you're sure to be your favorite, at least for a while, until you get her the next box of Built Bars. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. We're also brought to you by Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing and you can track all the action at Bet Online. I would advise betting against the Rockies. This week has tons of sports action on the go. You've got all of these different sports going on, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDON. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. We'll be right back on Locked On. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. All right, Adamara, so I got a question for you. So Paul Millsap does not play in the Lakers game. They've been doing this thing where basically 2 of the guys will play. Malone kind of figured that he cannot make room for all 3 of them. So Millsap and Green will play, or Millsap and JaVale, or Green and JaVale, but not all 3. Now, had you asked me going into the Lakers game, does Paul Millsap need to play? My answer would have been no. Millsap is at a point in his career where he really struggles versus these elite guys. Like, it's especially if they're super athletic. Davis is about the worst possible matchup for Paul Millsap outside of LeBron James. Like, it's just, it's really tough. However, I know this on last night's show. The Lakers were +1 in the minutes that Davis did not play. And I feel like if you had Paul Millsap to give a little bit of an offensive boost in those minutes, it might have been helpful. It's hindsight's obviously 50-50. Maybe if Jermichael Green makes another 3, that entire formula changes. But what did you think of JaVale last night? What do you think of the big rotation in general? And how tricky is it to manage when you're only allowed to play 2 of 3 pretty good impactful players?
Yeah, it is interesting. And, you know, the one takeaway I had from JaVale's night is it felt like he was shooting a lot. I think he took the 3rd most shots. And, you know, maybe this was just the flow of the game. I mean, you look at that second unit, somebody's going to have to shoot. He found himself, you know, open or in position to be open a lot. But it just felt, especially in that first stint, I was like, oh, wow, another JaVale shot, another JaVale touch here inside. It felt like a lot. I do think, you know, Millsap's been playing great lately. My thoughts about if there's a Nuggets Lakers series, you know, with LeBron back, who knows if he's healthy? Who knows how that changes things? I actually think Schroeder too is like a sneaky, impactful player against the Nuggets if he's healthy too. So both of those guys being out, I think the series would be different or games would be different. But I do wonder if there's a little chess game between just the front court. Do you play Drummond more than Gasol? Gasol more than Drummond? Do you play Anthony Davis at center? Does Denver counter by playing Millsap more? Do they counter by playing JaVale more? Jermichael Green doesn't play. I don't know. I think that if that series were to happen, we probably would see a lot of different combinations on both sides.
I think the JaVale, it was really kind of weird how people were reacting. Like there was like this real feeling that JaVale was going to be like this major impact guy, and that's just not who he is. Like that's never honestly been who he is. And since his time, the last time with the Nuggets, and there's a reason that ended the way it did. And it's not honestly like JaVale's a much better player now, and I think that he's able to give them some good minutes in certain matchups. One thing I thought was interesting that was that we didn't see a lot of Jokic JaVale versus the AD Drummond lineup, and I wonder if we're going to see a little bit more of that if they play in a playoff series, because like I would want to see that. Like I would absolutely like I would want to play those two together in that.
I thought Aaron Gordon did a very good job on Anthony Davis.
He really did. That block. I mean,
The thing that's tough is, you know, I think Jokic and AG both can be very good in against the Lakers series, but it's going to be hard for them not to be in foul trouble, especially Aaron Gordon. Just Anthony Davis draws an enormous amount of fouls, and to guard him appropriately, you have to sort of take risks. And last night, he only played 25 minutes. In a playoff series, he probably plays a little bit more, but the reason he played 25 minutes was because Malone pulled him out when he got four fouls and rested and sat him for a while. In a playoffs, maybe you just say, hey, we just got to live with this and hope he doesn't pick up number five. But I actually was very encouraged with how Aaron Gordon guarded Anthony Davis last night, despite Anthony Davis having a pretty good game.
One thing with Aaron Gordon, though, if LeBron plays, I think AG's got to be on LeBron full time.
I wonder about that. I was thinking about that exact thing. Well, I mean, first of all, that means Michael Porter's on Anthony Davis. It's not like there's a good answer to how Denver's going to match up there. But similar to last night, the Lakers, in my opinion, if they could shut down Michael Porter, Denver wasn't going to score 100 points because they can't stop Jokic. You can make it hard on him, but if you cut off the second best player, you can limit him. I think the same is true of the Lakers. LeBron's great. But if you take away Anthony Davis, he's going to be great passing to Caruso and passing to Marcus Morris. And it's like, okay, those guys might make shots, but odds are they're not going to score 100 playing that way. So I think there's a little bit of that scenario for both teams.
I just want to note that you are electing to put Michael Porter Jr. full-time on LeBron, and that is choosing violence. And I do not endorse this concept because I like Michael Porter Jr. and want him to feel good about himself. Hey, I don't know. Maybe. I'll ask. Do you think that he could do a surprisingly okay job on LeBron?
No, but you don't. Like, I mean, I don't. Not a good answer. I mean,
I think here's the thing. LeBron's kind of an interesting one to kind of evaluate because, quite honestly, if you really dig into the film on him and then you compare that with the data, this is what you walk away with. LeBron gets a better whistle in LA than he has ever gotten in his career. Shock! Shocker. He's still not probably getting the full, like, he does not get the kind of calls that some players get.
I'll tell you, well, here's one thing. Let me tell you one thing that, I'm sorry, did I interrupt? Did you have a finishing point on that?
No, my only concern is if it doesn't go that way, my concern is you can't afford MPJ in foul trouble, period. And not.
Definitely cannot, and maybe that is the result of this. But here's one thing I'll say. Part of what has made LeBron great later on in his career is that his jumper is reliable, and he's so big that players, you can't really sag off him, and if you get into him, he goes around you. If you sag off, he can shoot it. I think Michael Porter, he bothers tall players with that because he's the one guy that can sag off and still maybe not block your shot, but feel like it. And I just wonder if he could play a little bit off of LeBron in a way that disrupts him. And also, by the way, LeBron right now, not exactly great, not exactly tip-top shape, not exactly tip-top health. And I wonder if when players, especially with lower leg injuries, your jumper gets changed, especially your deep jumper. And I just wonder if LeBron can beat you in a series right now shooting jumpers. I kind of think he can't.
See, I think I'm on the other side in terms of you mentioned like how MPJ can – like MPJ 6'10". That's why I want him on Davis. Like
– yeah.
I'm not worried about Anthony Davis posting. I'm just not. He's not like he is not physical enough. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to post skinny little forwards. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Like he wants to punish small dudes and then look all impressive. If you get a big guy on him, most of the time he's going to face up and he's just going to shoot. And he knocked them all down last year and they won the title and he's got a ring now. But that is not a bad counter.
Here's one last thing about the AG. Does he guard Davis or LeBron? It's easier to switch a defender off of LeBron than it is Davis because a ball in your hands, a ball screen is just easier than a non-ball screen to get a guy to switch. Mm-hmm. So I think if you had Aaron Gordon on Davis, chances are he's going to finish plays on Davis more. If you have him on LeBron, you probably just screen him off of LeBron.
This is what's crazy is like their best answer here is to go to AD at five and then do 1-5 and force Jokic to either switch onto LeBron or put pressure on LeBron and open Davis in the middle.
Yeah.
But they're not going to do that because Davis doesn't want to play five because he can't handle the physicality. So it's just, I mean, it's just funny. The Lakers fans are realizing that now that like, wow, AD really doesn't want to play five, does he? Like, that's why Andre Drummond is here. This next game tomorrow, I think is interesting. Knicks have been playing great basketball. It's a grinded out team. They have the number three offense over the last 15 games. So there might be a perception that it's all effort in defense, and it's not. Like, they actually have some weapons. RJ Barrett, Derrick Rose is playing very well right now. Randall's obviously just been phenomenal this season. Like, I go back and forth on my MVP list if Chris Paul or Randall would make fifth. That's how good I think that they've been. So,
especially lately. I mean, they've been very good the second half of the season.
Yeah, and so this has implications for both teams. I will say the Knicks are in a little bit less of a fight. The Hawks have slid a little bit, and that's gotten them some breathing room. Like the Knicks are almost guaranteed to be in the 4-5. They're pretty much guaranteed to be in the 4-5 at this point. So they don't have that much to play for. But they will play
hard. Neither does Denver, though, to be honest with you. And I think this is – if you want to know my actual number one takeaway from last night's game, Denver just wasn't – as urgent as the Lakers. The Lakers really needed that game. And you saw Anthony Davis afterwards. We're back, baby. We're back. They needed to feel good about themselves. And the Nuggets kind of didn't.
Yeah. The Clippers are, as we record this, are currently up 5 with 18 seconds left. So it looks like they're going to escape the Toronto Raptors, which will put them back up by a half game over the Denver Nuggets. However, the Nuggets are still tied in the loss column. So a win and they tie them back up and retake third.
I'll tell you what, I think the Lakers are not going to be the fifth seed. LeBron is out for at least two more games, and there's rumors that maybe it'll be longer than that. I think that Dallas is going to be the five seed. So take what now I wonder is Lakers going to be 6 or 7, but I just don't think they'll be five. Do you think I'm crazy for saying that?
No, I don't think so, because the Mavericks have tiebreaker. So that's the thing is the Mavericks got those two games with LeBron out, and that they won both those and got tiebreaker. So now the Lakers have to get past them, and the Mavericks, don't get me wrong, the Mavericks have a strong tendency to screw up and screw around. That win tonight, honestly, versus the Heat was a pretty big one. That helps them. Yeah. So I've been saying this to this last night. This is honestly the entire Western Conference has its eyes on one game this week, and it is not Lakers on Thursday.
Lakers Portland.
It's Lakers Blazers Friday. The winner of that game gets tiebreaker. So here's how it works on multiple levels. If it's head to head, like if the Mavericks slip and the Blazers and Lakers were to surge but wind up tied, that game would decide who gets the five versus the six. More compelling is the fact that these 30 teams are very much within range of a three-way tie. Dallas would win division, and so they would get the five seed. And then it would come down to 6 and 7 would be decided by this game on Friday. This game on Friday without LeBron James is absolutely massive. This one game may honestly decide who's in the play-in at the seventh spot and who isn't.
I'm telling you, I at this point, I would be shocked if the Lakers were the five seed. I think they're the 6 or 7 seed. And the Lakers are going to feel good about that win last night, but I don't know they necessarily should. If like I was a Lakers fan, playing without LeBron, they beat a team that also couldn't score. They won with 93 points. I don't think that's going to happen against the Clippers, against Portland. They're going to have to score more than that. And I think they're going to lose a lot of games down the stretch, but maybe I'm just hopeful.
Can I just note that the Los Angeles Lakers were excited and screaming, we're back after beating the Nuggets without Jamal Murray. Like,
of course.
But not only is that like ridiculous, but it's actually not. And that's a testament to how good Denver is. Right. Denver is a team that if you beat, you're excited. If you beat them without Jamal Murray, you're still like, whoa, let's go at home.
It's so true.
Notably, Nets have Mavericks on Thursday. So the Mavericks have the Nets, rather. So that's a big,
that's the way to put it.
Yeah, that's a big game. And that one's going to matter. The Mavericks then have the Cavs on Friday.
That's a win.
Well, the problem is this is the thing with the Mavericks. They have the worst record of the top eight teams in the Western Conference versus teams under 500. That's why they lost to the Kings. That's why they continue to screw around. Like, they have real problems beating these types of teams. This is why when everyone's like, oh, look at Dallas' schedule. And I was like, that only matters if you're the type of team that beats teams that are worse than you. This is the problem. Look, man,
all I'm saying is I think the Lakers are going to struggle down the stretch. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll surprise me. But
I think there's a very good chance. I would say right now, at Action Network, we debuted our daily playoff picture look, which has got actual simulations based off of like a power rating formula. Right now, there is a pretty big chance that the Lakers wind up in five. I expect that to change with Dallas's win tonight, and it will change dramatically based off of the games versus the Clippers and the Blazers. Like, if the Lakers go 2-0, then yeah, they're probably going to be the five. If the Lakers go 0-2, they're probably going to be the seven. Like, this is, we are in crunch time, which is why, honestly, it's so impressive. The Nuggets were like, what, eighth, 10th in the West in January. And now, like, they literally are just like, can't really catch the two seed. Right. Not going to fall to six.
Not even going to fall to five, to be honest. I mean, I think they're probably one day away from passing that. One more win or one more loss ahead of passing that threshold.
I have them. Can I tell you?
Yeah, you can tell me.
Okay.
So it's got to be one, I'm pretty sure.
For home court in the first round for a top four seed is, in fact, one. Yeah. The Mavericks have 44. Well, no, it's two. The Mavericks have a max of 44 wins. The Nuggets are at 43. They got to get to 45. So their magic number.
Dallas have tiebreaker? I don't remember that.
Yeah, Dallas has tiebreaker.
Okay. Either way, it doesn't matter. I mean, I think they're clear.
Yeah, they're clear. They're going to be a top four seed.
And they have a home court.
That's great.
Can I say one more thing about the game last night, because there is one more detail? You know, the last 2-minute report came out, there were two calls in it that went against Denver that they talked about. One was a Caruso travel that I don't even remember. The other one, though, I do remember, and I was surprised nobody talked about it after the game. It was a post up by Jokic. It was really, Jokic was sort of on fire. He was starting to really roll and carrying the team back, and he goes one-on-one in the post with Marc Gasol, and Marc Gasol, I thought, really laid into him. And Jokic almost fell down and then passed it out. And Jokic kept playing. You know, he didn't look at the referee or anything. And maybe that's why nobody made a big deal of it. But that specific call in that moment was the result of, I talk about this all the time, if you establish physicality early, the referees just say, okay, this is what we're letting go. And that was a play where it was like, he knocked him over. Like, he just knocked Jokic over. Jokic is a big dude. And that's the one thing when you talk about Drummond and Marc Gasol as a tandem. And even Montrezl Harrell, even though I know Jokic cooks Montrezl Harrell, he likes to put hands on you. He likes to get physical and elbow and do all these different things. And if the Lakers successfully, you know, create the feel where that's going to be allowed, it is going to make things a little bit harder on Jokic. And I just thought Jokic was going to score in that moment, and he got kind of knocked out off of his spot.
Yeah, I think part of it is they, to their credit, I will say this, they let Jokic bump more with littles, right? Actually, when you try and switch on Jokic, a lot of times guys will draw offensive fouls. They don't call those as much. I think
Jokic is very good about this. Is a thing in the post, though. If you go into the chest of a guy, you're going to get, especially small guys, that's where this happens. Jokic is always good at going at the outside shoulder. If you watch, that's what he draws a lot of the fouls, because he'll throw his chest into somebody's shoulder, and that's, you know, by the letter of the law, that's the defense's fault. So I think he's very crafty at that specific type of.
Yeah, I'm not saying he deserves it. I'm saying he doesn't get hit with what I feel are unnecessary or wrong fouls. Like, I think a lot of bigs do in those situations. Like, you and I talked about this, about how the officials always tend to reward the little guy.
Yeah,
I think that helps that. But I do think that, I don't think Gasol is the only one. We've seen guys just absolutely, if you buck up to Jokic in the post, and honestly, for all the weight loss, it's still very tough to do versus Joker. Like, he is a
he's bull. Huge. He's enormous. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a bull down there. But if you do buck up to him, you can get away with it. That's just like, and I talked about this last night. We've mentioned this friend before, but our mutual friend Kirk Henderson is always complaining about the Lakers and how they are always fouling. And they are. This is a tried and true approach. The Pistons did this in the 2000s, like the early 2000s. The Spurs honestly did this in the late 2000s. The Celtics would do this in the Big Three era. If you establish physicality on every play, and you're basically saying you're going to have to call everything, like you're going to have to call everything. The officials won't, like there's only so much they can do to corral it. And once you set those parameters, it's basically on the other team to match that physicality, which there was this question last year with the Clippers, right? Of are the Nuggets soft? I don't think they're soft. I do think that much of their particular weaponry offensively is dependent upon a freedom that is more difficult versus that physicality. That doesn't mean they can't get beat. It's tougher without Murray. The question I have is, who is really going to be able to do that outside of the Lakers? Yeah. Like that's the Jazz can.
Yeah. Yeah. They have favors. It's not like he's not a huge part of their team, but I mean, they have him that they could deploy. Yeah. He's a beast.
And it's honestly, it's not just versus Joker. It's you've got to do it versus Joker and the wings. You got to grab and pull and make sure guys can't get loose. Cause like, that's a lot of it too. And if you want to say like, well, those should be fouls. Okay. I agree with you, but they're not going to like at some level, I have to deal with what is right versus what should be. That's not going to be, there's just going to be less freedom of movement. And that's where, honestly, I think you need stuff like MPJ is going to have to move, like absolutely burst around handoffs and rise quickly. A lot of the times, like Porter is still, because he's still learning these movements and going through them, he goes through them with a real effortlessness because of how easy it is for him.
Right.
Yep. I think a lot of these situations, he's going to absolutely have to come careening off of the screen, get that ball and rise up very quickly to hit the shot. Like you're going to be rushed a lot in the playoffs and you better be ready for that.
I would not be surprised if Michael Porter's playoffs this year mirror Jamal Murray's first playoffs where game 1 and 2, remember how bad Murray was until the very end of game 2. And as it went on, he got more and more comfortable. And I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Porter looks a little rough early on in the series, just adjusting to things, but he's so talented. And I think so determined that I expect him to play well by the end of it, which might be 4, 5, 6 games into it, but I think he'll improve. And I think it'll be great for him.
Do you believe in, are you superstitious?
No, but I'm a little stitious.
So you haven't seen this show because you don't do pop culture, but there's a show called Ted Lasso that's absolutely.
I have seen Ted Lasso. What? I actually do pop culture. What I don't do is child pop culture for adults. That's the one I don't do, but I do pop culture quite a bit.
Okay. All right.
Don't. I named my children after two musicians. I do pop culture.
Okay. All right. Yes. Two musicians from the 60s. So I think, but no, the Ted Lasso scene where the training room is cursed.
Yeah.
They go in there and they burn I feel like we need to do that for the Locked On Nuggets audience. Like everybody needs to bring in something and get rid of it and burn it in order to free the team of the negative energy.
This is a great idea.
We might have to have
a public burning. You're right. Nuggets fans, we might have to get together down at the bar. We're going to get a little trash can. We're going to do it.
Yep.
This is so funny.
Yep.
All right. Maybe this Friday at the DNVR bar. We get a trash can out in the back. We'll get some gasoline. We're all going to bring something of value.
Headline reads, giant Denver fire breaks out at attempted curse breaking. All right. That's going to wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nuggets. Rate, review, and subscribe. You can check out a video version of this podcast on the 9 News website. Thanks to Tegna. My thanks to Adam Morris for joining me tonight. We'll be back tomorrow post-game after the Knicks game as we get you set for what's going to be a pretty big weekend for the Nuggets, with the Jazz and the Nets right around the corner. Almost to the end of the season, I'll keep you apprised of everything with the playoff picture. Adam will keep you apprised with all things Jokic related. Is just Jokic.
Of course.
Man. Yeah. I am currently in the process of writing, every year I write the definitive cases for MVP candidates. Today I opened the file and I am currently writing the definitive case for Nikola Jokic for MVP. Not that he needs it, because guess what? He's going to win. Odds are minus 10,000 now. He's going to win the thing. But you're going to expect to see that on Action Network. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to set a reminder for our locker room on Friday at noon. Until then, for Adam Morris, I'm Matt Moore. Thanks for joining us on Locked On Nuggets.